100 days on the place, yeah, man. It's a kick it, you know. That's right.
Yeah, me rolling and rock it to the beat, and me love the sound.
Oh, Chess, you can mess with the sound. Better grab your girl, your posse, and gather round.
Yeah, me rolling and bobbing and going like a mad man. Oh, the man got the sweet day off and 19 no long, so me say.
Hey, Digital Sister is back. How's everybody? Thank you to my listeners in Paris, Milan, England, Brazil, and Chile. Welcome to the hood. It's really nice having you tune in, and continue to pass the podcast around and share it with your friends. Well, I have some exciting news to talk about in this podcast. Remember a few podcasts ago, I talked about a gangster lit publisher who had a very interesting history. Well, her name is Vicky M. Stringer, and I had the pleasure of meeting her today. I was a presenter at the National Association of Blacks in Criminal Justice, the Ohio chapter, and they had their conference in Cleveland, Ohio, and lo and behold, guess who the keynote speaker was? It was Vicky Stringer. I was so excited and so delighted that I had the chance, A, to be a presenter at the conference, but more importantly, to actually talk to Ms. Stringer for a few moments and to get information, contact information with her. And I bought three of her books, too. Her first book was called Let That Be the Reason, which is very autobiographical. And the second part to it is called Imagine This. And she's also written a book called How to Succeed in the Publishing Game. But in any event, if you don't know Vicky's history, I'm just going to share a little bit with you just to give you an idea of where she comes from. She had an ex-boyfriend who was a drug dealer and a gangster and a thug and all of that, and she got caught up in the game, and she started out tricking, and it progressed to something much bigger. She was really a serious drug kingpin. You usually hear about the guys doing that, but for a woman to make it big like that, that's very rare. And she was so big that she was supplying, who is this group? The Short North Posse. I guess they were very notorious in the 90s. And she was so big and so deep into it that she was raking in like $1 million a week just from being this drug kingpin. And her whole operation was so high tech that she had a ring, a drug ring, and the vehicles were equipped with electronically controlled secret compartments where the drugs and the cash were hidden. So she was running a serious, serious drug ring. But in any event, on September 16, 1994, she went to drop her 2-year-old son off to daycare, and she never picked him up again because the feds busted her. And she spent 7 years in the federal prison system, because she was a drug dealer. And she told that story while she was at the conference today. But she also was a very fascinating guest speaker because she came and spoke to the very audience of people, corrections officers, wardens, assistant wardens, parole officers, everybody involved in the criminal justice system. She came as a guest speaker to address the audience and really to thank them, because she said if it were not for many of the kind corrections officers in the prison who saw something in her beyond what she was as this drug dealer, as this number, they did lots of things to help her. And she came back to address the crowd and really to thank them. And, you know, they brought her in and paid her an honorarium. But she said, and I thought this is really a classy woman, she said she didn't need the honorarium, even though she was very thankful for it. She didn't need it because she came to give money to the organization in the form of scholarships. And she also has started a foundation called the Valen Foundation, named after her son, which is a foundation which is devoted to bridging the gap between children and parents who are incarcerated in prison. And she, I mean, I was so moved, and I was just so excited to meet her. It was like meeting a rock star to me. But I will be in contact with her and vice versa, and I'm going to look forward to having her as a guest on my internet radio program, which is on www.globaltalkradio.com, and the name of my show is Demystifying Nonprofits, and it's on every Tuesday live at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So I'm very excited that I had the chance to actually meet Vicki and talk with her a few moments and to purchase three of her books, which I cannot wait to start reading to get into what she was like and that whole that lifestyle of the game. And like she said, she got really caught up in the game of it. And, you know, it's it was a dangerous life, a hard life. And, you know, I hate to say it, but prison probably saved her life, because I'm sure eventually someone would have killed her. And then her poor little son would have been without her mom. But in any event, in the next coming weeks, you know, tune into the show. Keep an eye out, because I'm going to have the great privilege and pleasure to interview Vicki Stringer. And I can't wait, because I know she's got a real serious and powerful story to talk about. So that's very exciting that someone that I saw and I thought would be good information for the podcast has come to, you know, in my space, and I've had the chance to actually meet and interview them. And that also happened with Farrah Gray. I saw him on BET in December 2005 and thought, oh, he would be so cool to interview. And as it turned out, because God is good, that on March 14, 2006, I interviewed Farrah Gray on my radio program. So the same thing is happening with Vicki Stringer, so I'm like really, really, really excited. But some other hip-hop news that I'd like to share with you is that today on my show on Demystifying Nonprofits, I had hip-hop duo 216 on. They are Universal recording artists, and they have a new CD out, which is called The Game Is Life. And the members of the duo of 216 are Bees Portier and Train Fontaine. So I had a really great conversation with them, and we had a chance to play three tracks from the CD, Street Music, Hey Hey, and My Grind. And the guys are really great, and they gave some great insight about the hip-hop industry and the things that an artist has to go through to really get their music played and to keep current and to really develop their style. So if you have a chance, tune in and listen to the archive of that show, which we did live this evening, which is happens to be Tuesday on October 17th. We did that live at 6 p.m. on my show. So go to the website, www.globaltalkradio.com. Look for Demystifying Nonprofits. That's my show. And you can click on the link to the show, and it will bring up the show page, and you'll be able to actually listen to the show with 216 in its entirety, and you'll get to hear a couple of tracks from their song. So I was very excited to have a show devoted to hip-hop and to, again, kind of make Demystifying Nonprofits cutting edge. Very exciting. I'm very excited that I met Vicki this morning, and I was very excited that I had the chance to interview 216. So check it out. Support their music and check out Vicki Stringer's books and support her. She's doing very well. So very exciting, very exciting, very exciting. Let me shift gears just a little bit. Let me stay with the music news because I think that's what we're starting out with right now. Looks like Jay-Z's concert in China was canceled by the China Cultural Ministry because, and I quote, Jay-Z's foul mouth is just too much for the Chinese government. And basically, they were afraid that his music, is too vulgar, and that it would be a bad influence and corrupt the minds of their youth. So, they canceled his show for the time being. He's hoping at some point to get that rescheduled. But it seems like, the Rolling Stones and the Black Eyed Peas have been given the green light by China's culture ministry to perform in that country. So, that's very interesting that that a country has, a ministry of culture, basically, and they can determine who and what artist fits their criteria to come and perform. So it's not like they can just go to any country, perhaps like in the United States, and, get a venue and then perform. So I think that's very interesting that China found that he is a little bit too controversial and has the potential to corrupt the minds of the youth. Never mind the fact that the youth are really into hip-hop, but maybe it's a different type of situation in China, because in Japan they just love hip-hop. And speaking of that, in fact, what's so wonderful about Vicky Stringer's book is that two of her books have been translated into Japanese. So she just returned not too long ago from Japan as she was working on that. So, because Japan loves hip-hop culture. But anyway, that's exciting for her. But in any event, maybe Jay-Z will be able to perform at some point down the road if he can show, that the lyrics are not going to corrupt the minds of the Chinese youth. But very interesting that that occurred. Looks like Will and Jada are going to be bringing another pilot show back to CBS. It's going to be a new drama. And it's going to be set at the CDC. So they're going to be talking about some health issues and bringing that to the forefront. So that should be very interesting to have that kind of show with that kind of slant. They're always doing interesting things. So kudos to Will and Jada for continuing to bring some shows to network TV, because I think they're probably going to end up being like the next Bill Cosby. He had his show and then A Different World. Looks like Will and Jada have their show. I think it's called All of You or something like that, and they're going to have other shows. So, kudos to them for continuing to create programming and shows that will give actors of color a chance to be on network TV. Interestingly enough, Jadakiss was released. He was picked up on suspicion of drug and weapons possession. And he really, he called himself a knucklehead for being in that situation. He said that he should have just gone home and gotten ready to do the VH1 Hip Hop Honors and all of that. But instead, he was he explained to Angie Martinez on, Hot 95, that he was outside the car. The car was locked. You figure it out. So he probably, I don't know what happened, but whatever it was, he got arrested. And he just said, I should have been doing something else and not, being out in the street, being a knucklehead. So I'm glad that he was released. I hope it doesn't cause too many problems for him. But I think this is kind of making him think, and I hope it makes other individuals think too, that, sometimes it's best just to go home and get ready for your next day instead of just being out there and possibly, getting into some trouble. Looks like Diddy's got a documentary that's going to be coming out by filmmaker Derek, I hope I say it, See in France, which offers a black and white portrait of Sean Combs. Because, you know, we see little things about him in the paper and his parties on the Hamptons and all that sort of stuff. But it will be very interesting just to hear an interview and kind of get to know who the man Sean Combs really is. So I think that's great because I think he's done very well. He's done some good things, so it'll be very interesting just to learn a little bit more about him beyond just the little snippets that we see in the news about him. So good for him. I'm glad that there's going to be some information out there about him. Well, it looks like R. Kelly is finally going to trial, and this has been going on for some time. Initially, he was indicted in June 2002 on 21 counts of vulgarity or pornography, whatever you want to call it, based on this videotape that allegedly showed him engaging in sex acts with a 14-year-old girl. It turns out that 7 of those counts were later thrown out. But in any event, it's been a long time, you know, coming for this trial, and he pleaded not guilty and maintains that the man in the video was not him. But it's finally happening, so, you know, we're just going to have to see what happens. Because if he gets convicted on child pornography charges, he could potentially face up to 15 years in state prison and have like a $100,000 fine, and, which I think is probably, you know, the most long-lasting, forced to register as a sex offender. So, you know, we'll have to see what happens with that, you know. And I hope, we'll just have to see what happens because we don't know what's going to happen with that. Seems like the velvet teddy bear, Ruben, has taken off about 50 pounds. And I'm really glad he did because he's so young. He's just 28, and he's had such tremendous success since he won American Idol. And I was thinking, I hope he gets that under control because it would be a shame for him to have all this success and then to have some kind of health problem or even sudden death, because he was peaking at 450 pounds, which is like way too much weight for him to carry. So I'm really glad that he's taking care of himself and taking off the weight. So that he will have some longevity to his singing career and avoid, I think, some of the health issues that plagued Luther Vandross and Barry White, you know, the obesity, the diabetes, and the fluctuating weight. So I'm glad he has taken his health seriously and that he's, you know, taking care of himself and getting rid of that weight so he'll be around a long time. We can enjoy his smooth voice. But let me shift gears with some information about what I thought was very interesting. There's a paper that's published out of Washington, the Washington area, and it's called The Afro-American, and it was founded in 1892. Yes, I said it, 1892, so it has a 114-year history. And, I mean, I'm up here in Ohio, but I never really heard about this paper. But I guess if I lived in Baltimore in the Washington, D.C. area, you know, I would. But the Afro-American newspaper produces 2 weekly publications. There's a Baltimore edition and the Washington, D.C. edition. They have a website, and they have a public affairs radio program, First Edition, on Morgan State University Radio, WEAA-FM 88.9. But in any event, this paper is very unique because they have always, in the past, sent a black reporter to war zones to get the real story of what's going on and to put a black face on the story. Because I don't know about you, and you've heard me rant and rave in my previous podcast, but as we look at the whole situation in Iraq, I mean, very rarely do you ever see any black soldiers. Very rarely do you get to hear, when they do have those sound bites, you just don't really get to hear from them to see what their opinions are and how they feel about this. So I thought it was really interesting that this paper is going to be sending reporter Leonard Sparks to Baghdad, and he's going to be with the American troops for about 3 weeks in October, and he's going to put a black face on this war and give us another perspective and give us another opinion that I think is missing from this story, because we need to hear what some of our African-American soldiers think and how they feel about the war, how they feel about the long and deployments and the multiple deployments that are happening as the result of the forces being stretched to the gills. So I thought this is like really, really cool. So I hope that I will be able to find some information as the articles come out and share that with you so that we can get another perspective about this situation. Because you know I went off a few podcasts ago about the coverage of 9/11, and you know I went off a little while ago about Hurricane Katrina. So I just think it's very interesting that there is a paper out there that is putting another spin on the story. So we get the full story of what's going on. Just kind of switching back to music, Gary Taylor, he's a R&B artist who has taken it upon himself to write a 3-part article talking about the situation with black radio today and his longing for meaningful adult contemporary music being played on the radio. And he's talking about how it's a lack of that going on. And he talked about also about how, I remember back in the day, and I remember because I used to do this too, remember when there were record stores within the community and you would just go to a local record store and you could talk to the owner and they could turn you on to new music or tell you a story about a particular artist, but it was just a whole experience when you went to go buy some music. It wasn't like today where you went into some big chain and, you know, you have impersonal people who really may or may not know too much about the music and who really don't, you know, that's a job for them. It's not somebody that owns a record store in the community who is like living, eating, and breathing that music. But he talked about how that was missing today, and I have to agree with him too. The whole experience of buying music is so different now because you have the internet, you have MySpace, you have all kinds of things that are in some ways making it more personal, but in some ways making it a little bit more impersonal. But in any event, he's kind of mentioned how he's taken Tom Joyner to task, and he's kind of taken to task how the big conglomerates are the ones really driving the music that we're hearing today. It isn't necessarily the DJ. It isn't necessarily the programming directors like it was, you know, many, many years ago. But it seems to be, you know, big business. And we hear, as I said before, some of the same songs over and over and over again that Gary Taylor's talking about, you know, what's missing and what people want to hear. And he has embraced the new technology because he has space on MySpace, and he's also loving the fact that even though he's not getting great airplay except for maybe 4 stations in the States, he has a great following in Europe, particularly in England, which is no surprise because it seems as though the English in particular have a real affinity for, you know, soul music and black soul music and the old R&B artists. You know, look at the Rolling Stones, look at Eric Clapton, you know, Tina Turner. I mean, look at so many of the British Invasion, where all they listened to was black music, and they you know, made that part of what they do, you know. And so they are very much embraced over in England, and it's called retro blackness, as a matter of fact. They love it, and they support his music. But here in the United States, it's a whole different animal, and it's even a whole different animal within, you know, black radio. So that's what he's basically going off about in a nice way, that black adult contemporary radio has just changed, and it's not really the great music that we've had before, like say in the 80s or the early 90s, it's just driven by corporations. And so he's really talking about that, and he's hoping that at some point, you know, we can get back to that kind of warm feeling. I know things have changed a lot, and the industry's changed a lot, and the form of distribution of music has changed a lot. But I think he's longing for something that many of us long for, and that is just a sense of community with the music, the sense that maybe that there are DJs out there or programmers out there who believe in his passion and are looking to find good music to put on the stations too. And some of the PDs, the program directors, you know, they sympathize with him and they would love to play his music, but unfortunately, you know, the corporations rule, and so they really only play, let's say, the top 15, and we know the top 15 are the same songs that we hear over and over and over and over again. So I think he's got a great point, and I think he was very bold and brave to put himself out there like that. But I also think what it shows is that he's not afraid, and he feels that he has to speak his mind, and there's so many other avenues where his music can be obtained, you know, through the net or MySpace or other sites. But, you know, he still feels it's important enough to say, and his record sales, even though they're not being played on most mainstream radio stations, he has enough from the alternative distribution modes through the internet and MySpace that, you know, he's still selling his music and his music's being heard. And most importantly, it's being heard by people who really want to hear it. So I say, you know, I think it's a great discussion that he brings up. And, you know, I'd like to know what you think, too, about the state of music and what you're hearing on the radio and how in some places a lot of people have just given up. They've gone really maybe just to talk radio, or they're just downloading music, you know, from iTunes and things like that because they're totally dissatisfied with what they hear, so they will record and download solely what they want to hear. So, you know, give me leave me a message on 206-309-7325, and I'd like you to weigh in on that situation. You know, what do you feel is going on with music today, and how are you kind of coping with the difference and the way music is being played and distributed today? I think that would be a great discussion point that I would love to hear from some of you about. You know, it's going to change, and that's what 216 talked to me about. It's just different. And so I guess what all artists have to do, be it music, be it books, you know, whatever, you have to find ways that you will stay relevant and current. And I think many of us, you know, I'm a little artist myself, we long for the old days in some respect, when things were a little bit simpler and the music spoke for itself. So I think we're longing for that. But on the other hand, we have to embrace the new technology, you know, as I have done with the podcast and with digital, with my podcast, Digital Sister, and with my radio show, Demystifying Nonprofits. You still have to take advantage of the new technology and be part of that. Or, you know, if you don't, you're going to be totally irrelevant and nobody will really hear you. So I understand, you know, how he feels, and he's longing for that old school type of feeling. But on the other hand, he also knows he can voice his opinion, but he has to also stay current. So I just think it's, I'm glad that he did it, and I'm glad that Black America Web on EUR Web published his article, because it is, I think, a great discussion point that people should think about. And who knows, maybe at some point people will, you know, come together and maybe say something in mass that might get the attention of some of the big conglomerates who really, I should say probably the one or two conglomerates who really have all the programming on many of the radio stations across the country. But he raises an interesting point, which is a good point for discussion. Well, talking a little bit about nonprofits, as I always like to do, I just want to share with you that our organization, the United Black Fund of Greater Cleveland, finally got our first online donation through our website. And it took, oh my God, it took like about 3 years. And what I want to say to nonprofits is you have to leverage technology and you have to just try. Get your feet wet and just try. Now, sometimes organizations, depending on what your organization is about, you may put your donate button on your website and you may start getting donations, you know, relatively quick. I mean, relatively quick, within 6 months or so. But some organizations, it just takes a lot longer. And for us, it took 3 years. And so what does that mean? What it means is that we had to create other kinds of programming that people, potential donors, would find our organization interesting, innovative, and out there doing something. And so I believe with all of the new technology that we've added, you know, the podcast, the internet radio show, our various fundraising events, our various partnerships with other large organizations, and just everything that we do to create awareness about our organization has contributed to great programming that potential donors will now, when they go to our website at www.ubfogcfog.org, so that's www.ubfogc.org, when they go visit the website, they're looking at this organization that has very interesting programming, that's doing very interesting things that they want to support and be part of. Hence, someone made an anonymous donation, and we were so thrilled that that was our first online donation. And I'm hoping that that's going to be the first of many more to come. So what I want to say to nonprofits is that you, even though you will have that donation on your webpage, you still are going to have to come up with interesting bits of programming that will generate interest within potential donors to actually take the step and follow through with completing a donation. So it takes great programming in nonprofits to get donations, and that's something you have to keep in mind. And it doesn't happen overnight. You just have to keep trying and keep putting the information out there about your organization, find innovative ways to tell your story, just to get your name out there in the marketplace, and eventually you're going to start to see the benefits. So yes, it took us 3 years to get that first online donation, but from the time we set up our website in 2002 to now, we've been doing some very interesting programming things that is catching the attention of the public, so much so now that they are willing to make online donations. So that's what I would say with nonprofits. Don't give up. Don't get discouraged. Just keep creating interesting things, programming that people are going to want to be part of. And eventually, they're going to make a donation to you. Well, with that, I think I'm going to wrap it up and close up the podcast. I've had just an exhilarating day today, so I'm a little tired, but I want to thank you for tuning in, and stay tuned over the next few weeks, because I'm going to have an associate of mine, Michael Lilly, who's a videographer. He's going to stop by, you know, from time to time and join me on the podcast, and we're going to talk about some interesting things, you know, mixing some information about technology, but we're going to spice it up so that it will be interesting, and you will continue to come back and pass the podcast around to your friends. So again, thank you for listening. I think I'm going to wrap up because I'm tired, and have a great week, and you know, continue to tune in and continue to pass Digital Sista around. Well, it's Celeste, aka Digital Sista, signing out. Have a great week, and I'll be back to you in a few days.
dance with the song.
The West Side, the West Side.